Good morning. It's nice to see everyone here this early on Thursday morning. I'm Leah Doozy. I'm with USDA ARS at the National Soil Dynamics Lab in Auburn, Alabama. I would like to acknowledge Cotton Inc. for their funding for this project. It is ongoing, so these are kind of preliminary results, and we're just sort of working through this as we go. So some of the background, land is a limited resource. In the news, we've heard about increases in cropland values across the United States. Obviously, a lot of that has been centered in the Midwest, but we kind of wanted to see, okay, what's happening in the Cotton Belt? Are we seeing similar trends in the Cotton Belt? And so that was kind of the first step, as I wanted to look at what was actually going on with land values and rents in the Cotton Belt. Also, there's been a decrease in the rent-to-value ratio across the country, as well as an increase in the number of cropland acres that are rented by producers. From 1968 to 2007, it increased to about 45%, I think, across the country. Also, there are alternative rental agreements that are being used by growers, not just cash rent or share rent, but other types of rental agreements that are maybe a little more complicated or are different from just cash rent or share rent. So I'm going to talk a little bit about just some of the background information about cropland values and cropland rents. This slide is taken from the land values 2011 survey summary from NAS, and this just shows changes in cropland values by state across the country. Let's see if I can get my arrow to work. Obviously, the largest ones are in the Midwest, but if you look at across the Cotton Belt, you did see increases in California, in Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, then the Mid-South here in Arkansas and Louisiana and Mississippi. But then you get into the Southeast here and you saw decreases in Florida and Alabama with no changes in the Carolinas, Tennessee, and a slight increase in Georgia. So this just gives an idea of how cropland values changed on average. From 2010 to 2011. The newer data from 2011 to 2012 is out, but most of my research is based on data through 2011, so that's why I stuck with this graph, or this map. So as we can see, cropland values did increase in the Cotton Belt for some states, so it's kind of mixed. This is the county average rent-to-value ratios from 1999 to 2008. This is from the ERS publication, Trends in U.S. Farmland Values and Ownership. They published it in February of 2012. So this sort of shows the county average rent-to-values ratio. As you can see, they're higher. The blue, the dark blue, and kind of purple colors are your higher rent-to-value ratios, and then your green and orange kind of colors are your lower rent-to-value ratios, so it would take longer to pay off your land. This is the percent of land. This is from the same ERS publication. This is the percent of land and farms that were rented or leased in 2007. As you can see, the darker colors, the darker blue color here, is 50% or more of land is rented, and then the yellow and the tan, I guess, is your lower levels, less than 20 to 25%. So you can see there's definitely areas of the country, such as here along the Mississippi, Texas, California, where you have a lot of rented land. And so rental agreements become very important for producers and for landowners, both. So the objective of this work was to evaluate the impact of land values and rent on cotton producer profitability across the Cotton Belt, considering alternative methods of securing land and different production systems. If I went through every state in the Cotton Belt, we would be here all day. And so I'm pretty sure y'all don't want to hear all of it. So I did pick a few states to look at, because I am looking at all the states in the Cotton Belt. That's the goal at the end. But we're starting out with just a few. So most of my data came from NAS survey data. I used cotton yield, cotton lint prices, cotton seed prices, average rental rates, and average land values as published by NAS in their survey data. I used data from 1980 to 2011. And then I used enterprise budgets for these states that are available on their websites from 2012, although some 2013s are available. I used 2012. These are some maps that I created based on NAS survey data. I'm looking at Pima cotton also, but I'm just looking at upland for this presentation. So these are average upland cotton acres from 2007 to 2011. The red is your higher acres of upland cotton, and then the orange are your lower acres of upland cotton, and you can see how it's kind of distributed through the United States. So these are averages from 2007 to 2011. The per acre rent for non-irrigated cropland, so this is based on NAS survey data, so it's just averages once again. And so as you can see, this is for non-irrigated cropland. The orange is $0 to $25 an acre, so pretty low rents. And the blue is $25 to $50 an acre. Purples are $50 to $75. The greens, which are really over here, are 75 to 100, and then the reds are 100 to 130, and they're really, aside from a couple of counties over here, they're pretty much along here, along the Mississippi. So these are average rental rates as reported in the NAS surveys, and you can see it's really, California obviously here doesn't have a lot of non-irrigated land. And they are kind of in the $50 to $75 range. So you do get some pretty high rents here in the 100, average rents in the 100 to 130 range. And this is for irrigated land, and you can really see the shift in land in rental rates as you go from non-irrigated to irrigated. As you can see, it goes up to $350 to $550 an acre here in the, I guess ERS would consider that the fruitful realm, I think. And so then, and you have, these are just irrigated counties that have irrigated acres of cotton. And so you have 100 to 150 here along Mississippi, 150 to 200 down here in Georgia. You've got some mixtures of 50 to 100 with 100, 150 here, and then obviously your higher ones are over here in California and New Mexico and Arizona. These are average upland cotton yields. And this is irrigated and non-irrigated, so it's just average over both. And you can see it ranges from lows of 200 to highs of 1,800 for upland cotton yields. And it's kind of, you can see a pattern, it's kind of grouped. I like looking at it this way because it kind of gives me an idea of how it differs across the country. The six states that I started out looking at were Arkansas, California, Georgia, Mississippi, North Carolina, and Texas. For this presentation, I'm just focusing on Arkansas, Georgia, and Texas just for the sake of time. So those are the three states that I'll be focusing on. This kind of goes into the average cropland values for these six states. This is regardless of irrigated or non-irrigated, so it's both. As expected, California had the highest, and these are all in 2011 dollars. So, as you can see, California had the highest land cropland values in dollars per acre. Texas, Mississippi, and Arkansas were very similar down here in the bottom, and then North Carolina and Georgia were here in the middle. And I do have it broken out by irrigated and non-irrigated, and you'll see that in just a minute. So, as you can see, prices have kind of remain steady, land values down here kind of remain steady. In Georgia, they increased and then have sharply decreased, and same goes for North Carolina. They kind of stayed steady and then decreased in the last couple of years. And California has sort of been all over the board. This is irrigated cropland values, average irrigated cropland values based on NAS survey data. North Carolina is not included in this because they didn't break it out for non-irrigated or irrigated. And so these are just the five states that did. As you can see, California, once again, is the highest, followed by Georgia. And the remaining three states down here are about the same. This is average non-irrigated cropland values, and I guess this is the one that kind of surprised me a little bit. Georgia had a peak here in the 2006-2007, and then drops off down to about the same as California. And I'm not sure, I mean, I'm guessing that's partly related to the potential for development in Georgia. I haven't really looked into why that might have been happening. It's such a sharp increase there within a year or two. And then the remaining three states are all about the same down here at the bottom. So there are several different ways of securing land. Cash rent, which everybody's familiar with. I use the average cash rent from 2008 to 2011 by state. So this analysis is by state, not by county. I also looked at flexible cash rents, and there are a number of different flexible cash rents options. There's a flex on price, a flex on yield, there's a flex on revenue. You can also look at cash rent plus a bonus, so it'd be cash rent plus a flex on price, or cash rent plus a flex on yield. Share rent, and in this analysis, I assumed a 25% revenue share and a 25% on variable, a subset of variable costs, ones that impact production. Also include land purchase, if you wanted to buy the land, just to look at that option, with a down payment of 25%, interest rates of 5.5%, and a 25-year loan. So there are a million different options for methods of securing land. I mean, we can look at share rent where it's 35% or 30% or 20%. So I can't look at all of those in this presentation, but I am going to be doing a sensitivity analysis that will look at changes in those rates to see how they differ. The same goes for flexible cash rents. There's multiple different ways that you can look at flexible cash rent. And the way that I looked at it was based on a revenue, and I'll explain how I did it in just a minute. So this is the average cash rent and cropland values based on NAS survey data from 2008 to 2011. Actually, land values were based on 1980 to 2011. Rents were based on 2008 to 2011. I've also included the rent-to-value ratio calculated off of these numbers. Because I used the enterprise budgets, I looked at all the different options in those enterprise budgets. So whether they're using irrigated or dry land, different types of herbicide resistance, any of the different enterprise budgets that were available from these different states. So I looked at Arkansas with irrigated land, Arkansas with dry land, Georgia with dry land, and Texas with irrigated. And as you can see, there is a big difference in cropland values. So for rented land in Arkansas that's irrigated, it's about $105 an acre on average, with land values of $1,900 per acre, with a rent-to-value ratio of 0.056. Georgia dry land and Arkansas dry land were very similar, except in land values. Georgia land values on average for cropland values are significantly higher than in Arkansas on average for dry land. In Texas, irrigated land, the rent's about $80 an acre, and cropland values were $1,427. Arkansas and Texas on irrigated land have similar rent-to-value ratios. Georgia has a very, very low rent-to-value ratio, mainly because of their low rent and their high land values. This is my flexible cash rent. It's kind of busy, I know. It's how I set it up. It's based on rent equals base rent times yield divided by base yield times price divided by base price. This is just the option I use. There are many different options for how to do a flexible rent. Whether you want to just do a percentage of your revenue, or if you want to base it on price or yield. So the parts in the red, if I used a base rent of $105, the part in red would be where you're going to get more than $105. So at say $1 a pound and $8.70, which are both the average for Arkansas over this time, it would be $105. But if you bumped up to $920, a landowner would get $111 instead of $105. So this was just the option. It is heavily dependent on your base price. For example, I did a different example where I used a 70-cent base price. And as you can see, at 70 cents and $920 pounds, at 70 cents, I'd get $111. So it is dependent on what you set as your base price or your base yield, also your base rent, and whether or not you put a minimum and a maximum on that. So there are many different options. And for me, this is the easiest way to see it, is if I set up a spreadsheet and I can watch it change as I change my base price and my base yield and base rent. The methodology is I adjusted all prices to $2011 dollars using the producer price index. I used Simidor to simulate net return distributions using multivariate empirical distributions for yields, lint price, and cottonseed. And as I said before, I used data from 80 to 2011. These are my production costs. For each of the options, I had furrow irrigation, pivot irrigation, and dry land in Arkansas, conventional tillage and strip till on dry land in Georgia, and herbicide tolerant, insect resistant on dry land and pivot in Texas. So these are based on the average yields for those states. So this is Arkansas. In the first column, you have the different options. You have cash rent, flex cash rent, and share rent. The top one is just returns to, this is based on returns to variable cost. So the top one, the top line would not include any land. And so this is just variable cost. So it's return to variable cost. As you can see, the flex rent and the cash rent are very similar. They have similar probabilities of having net returns less than zero and above $200, mainly because at lower levels, you're paying the same thing. Share rent is less profitable, and as ownership in Arkansas is about the same. These are just different options, but it's a similar trend regardless of production option. This is for Georgia. I had two different options here, conventional till and strip till and dry land. As you can see, in Georgia, you have a higher probability of having net returns less than zero. But once again, the flex cash and the cash rent, based on my assumptions, are very similar. Share rent is your profitability would be lower, and land ownership, because of land values in Georgia, would be even lower. And it's a similar with the last option. Texas is about the same. Cash rent and flex rent are very similar, followed by share rent, and then land ownership is the least profitable based on my assumptions. And then it follows a similar pattern here with the probability in dry land, especially because of the low yields in dry land. In summary, profitability associated with alternative land rental agreements is dependent upon the type of rental agreement, input cost, price, and yield. Higher rental rates along with increasing input costs put pressure on returns over direct expenses as expected. Also, as I've said previously, flexible rents are really dependent on how you set that flex rent up. So you have to look at all the different options and watch it change as you adjust your base rent, price, and yield, and also your minimum and maximum. My next step is to conduct sensitivity analysis, especially related to the flexible rents, to see how they change the profitability. Thank you. Okay.